You've heard this. Pull into the Bassmaster Classic Arena probably more than once.
I like it.
If you can't figure out who today's guest is, you need to revisit some time on Bassmaster.com. But we've got another exciting show. This is Inside Bassmaster. This is your host, Thomas Allen, and we are going to interview Jim Sexton.
I'm the guest today?
Actually, that's not true, but Jim is right next to me. He is the man that keeps his finger hovering over the master control button of Bassmaster.com, among other things. But our special guest today, Jordan Lee, fiance Kristen. Kristen, I don't know your last name, but I'm guessing we can just say Lee.
You can say that.
Okay, but thank you guys.
She likes to hear that.
Agnew.
Jim has all this stuff squared away. Anyway, we're sitting down with the Lees. How's that sound?
Yeah.
Sounds pretty good. Okay. I like it.
It's fair. They're engaged, so we can kind of jump the
fair game.
I mean, it's coming soon.
It's coming soon enough. We've got a great story. Lots of cool things to talk about, and I'm excited that you're here. We're in these palatial studios in the Bassmaster Towers. What do you think of these?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a little dark in here. I kind of feel like I'm in an interrogation room with Thomas Allen.
there are cameras in the corners that you don't see.
Your deepest secrets.
I figured that.
Anyway, look. You have accomplished something this year that only two other anglers, and I think they were quite a bit older than you, when they accomplished it. You have told all the stories so many times. In fact, Kristen said before we came in that she could probably tell the stories. I'm not going to put that weight on your shoulders. But it's still exciting. Two-time back-to-back Bassmaster Classic champion, Jordan Lee. Congrats on a great performance.
Thank you.
I know you brought your trophy in. I'm a little disappointed you didn't bring both.
Yeah, you know, I didn't want to put that on Kristen to have him tote him around either, so I figured this one's good enough for now.
You've already got her caddy and your stuff around?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, it's a lot of strain.
Things are going to change for you real soon, my friend.
Do you have a really stout mantle that can hold two of those things?
Actually not. We're trying to work on that for when we build a house, you know, have a kind of like a little shrine, a little Bassmaster Classic.
Yeah, my office has turned into a Jordan Lee shrine a little bit.
Yeah,
it wasn't anyways before that?
It's kind of turned into that.
There's nothing wrong with that. Jim has spent the time, as he so diligently does, to collect all your statistics over the last couple of years. They're interesting, exciting. There might be something in there that makes you want to cry a little bit, and we're going to talk about that. I'm going to turn it over to Jim, the stats meister, and he's going to dig into your career numbers-wise.
Yeah, Let's go. So, Jordan, you started with this is your fourth year on the Elite Series, number four. Total of 52 Bassmaster tournaments. That's opens. That's not counting your college tournaments with Bassmaster. Right. It's opens and elites. So 52 tournaments, four classics, and you've won two of those classics. And I, you know, it was very difficult to do the winning percentage there, but no, it wasn't. It was 50%.
Yep.
So if you can keep that up, you know, boy, things are looking good.
Nobody's won three back to back. I'm just saying.
Hey, you got to win two first, don't you?
So,
before you go to three.
Yeah, exactly. And those four classics, I looked back at your finishes. So your first classic was 2014 at Gunnersville, and that was you qualified for that one via winning the college bracket tournament.
That's correct.
Which was on Muskegon Lake up in Michigan, and I was there, and I just remember my memory of Jordan Lee at that point. I had seen him before, but he just had a smile ear to ear, just so happy and happy to be there and happy to. This was even before he was announced the winner. He just all in on professional angling, and
yep.
I was really taken with your enthusiasm. That was your first classic. You finished sixth.
Mm.
First classic finished sixth, which is at this point the highest finish of a college champion.
That was at Gunnersville, right?
That was at Gunnersville.
So your home lake?
Of course, that sort of helped. But I tell you, you know, you think, okay, well, that was at his home lake. But you look at a bunch of other guys who would call that their home lake who did not do well in that class.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have a shot? I mean, were you on the right fish?
You know, that tournament, I think about it, or I used to think about it a lot because it changed so much, you know, from practice to just like every classic. Every classic I fished, all four of them, except Conroe, honestly, but all the rest of them have changed so much from the first day of practice to the last day of the tournament.
Right.
It always plays out this time of year, and that's what happened there. I mean, the water temp jumped up, got higher and muddier, you know, high and muddy, and it just changed the bite a lot, and I just happened to figure it out. halfway through the tournament, but it just changes so much this time of year. It's hard to be consistent. You see classics, every classic that we've the last 4 years has really been inconsistent, you know, as far as leaders, and that's just due to like the weather and just how things, how much, you know, things change this time of year in March.
So the second classic was 2016, and that was at Grand Lake. You finished 29th on that one. That's his worst classic finish. Mm-hmm. Was a 29.
So terrible. You know,
not a terrible. Bad. Not now. Halfway through the pack right there. That classic for 2016, you qualified, was it via the elites? Or was the
elites.
That was your elite point standing. 2017, of course, was at Lake Conroe in Texas. You finished first. And 2018, Greenville, just a couple weeks ago. Lake Hartwell finished first as well.
It's pretty good average.
Yeah, his average finish for those four tournaments is 9.25. So your average finish in the Classic is ninth place. Not too shabby. So
those two firsts really help.
Yeah, they help a lot. So out of 52 tournaments, you have finished 41 times in the money. All right. So your in the money percentage is 79%.
Is that the top percentage we've had so far?
It's really high. You know, Aaron Martin's, who was in last week, his is darn close to that.
I think
it's
it was
like 75.
75?
Yeah.
He's fished a lot more, though.
That's true. That's true, but you still have, what, 5 years? Is this your fifth season or fourth season?
Yeah, it's going on. This is my fourth season.
Fourth season.
Fourth on the elites, and then
you
had 2014 just fishing the opens.
Right.
And that's included in that number.
Okay.
There you go. Two first-place finishes. Those are the classics. And, of course, we've talked a lot about there's only two other guys that have won back-to-back, and that's Kevin Van Dam and Rick Klein. Mm-hmm. But there's only six guys total who have won two classics, which is kind of amazing to me.
I didn't know that.
The other guys who have won two classics, Bobby Murray, Hank Parker, and George Cochran.
Mm,
so that's awesome.
Some big names there, dude.
Big names.
It's some seriously big names from the early days of the sport. So really impressive. You got one second place finish. Was that Texoma?
That was Cayuga.
Cayuga.
That was
Cayuga. Van Dam.
Okay. Yep. Okay. and 20 top 10 finishes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's a 38% of the time in the top 10. Not too shabby.
Wow.
That's a new stat.
Total. Yeah, it is. That is. And the total weight in those 52 tournaments, 2,018 pounds.
That's a lot of bass.
That's a ton right there.
Now, here's kind of the funny thing. I don't know if this is going to be a good luck thing for you or a bad luck thing, but here we are. It's 2018, and you've caught 2018.
Hey, how about that? That's pretty cool.
0.4 ounces. So if we'd had this interview in a couple of days, and it was
April, wow,
that's cool.
It would have been really would have been
mind blowing. Jim Sexton.
Wow.
the other mind blowing number is in terms of winnings. Just from the tournaments, not counting sponsors, anything else, $1 million, $1,067,429. I gotta think that's the fastest that anybody has crossed $1 million.
Mm-hmm. It helps when you got two classic checks to throw
kinda,
in there, kinda, but
yeah, kind of jump started that
you
number. But the fastest and the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bill Dance in the early days won a lot and did really well. But the prize money wasn't nearly as big,
right?
And he didn't win the classic. So,
but it's impressive if you think about that. So there's 600K from two classics, which is awesome. But that the rest of that was made up in 3 years of fishing, and that's impressive
by
itself.
Really, it really is. So let's go into your stats from the previous year of tournaments.
Let's hear it.
Of course, Hartwell recently number one. Lake Martin, the first elite tournament of 2018, finished 68 in that tournament. Give us a little insight on Lake Martin. That was a grinder kind of tournament for most people.
We had a lot of tough finishes from some of the more, I guess, prominent anglers.
That's exactly right.
Yep. Well, you know, in that tournament, I usually don't have really good practices, but the first day there, I had a good practice. I mean, I had a good day fishing spotted bass, fishing deep, like a lot of the guys who were doing well, were doing, but I knew that wasn't going to win the tournament, but sometimes, you know, going into tournaments, it's hard to. I knew the largemouth were going to be hard to find in that tournament, but I knew they were going to probably win the tournament. So, you know, you can kind of look at it one of two ways, but the deep spotted bass, I got on that deal and got on it a little bit too early in practice because I kind of was just you know, not looking, just pressing those areas real hard and trying to find other places. I kind of did other different, you know, different things and really got spread out. And that's one thing that a lot of anglers did on Martin was get spread out, you know, the the largemouth bite. I did it every day of practice and even in the tournament, just because I knew that one bite just changes your day. And, you know, I, the first day I really just did too much. I fished for spots in the morning and caught a bunch of fish and had only probably 7 pounds, you know, 8 pounds. I'm like, you know, I got to do something different. Well, instead of just culling up all day, like a lot of the guys did, I fished for largemouth and really struggled. And, you know, day two I went out there and decided to fish for spots pretty much all day and had a decent day, you know, and moved up 20 places or so. But, yeah, that tournament was that one bite a day really – it really just jumped you up there. And,
right. Yeah, no doubt. And I remember you saying before that tournament that even though you went to school at Auburn, which is close by
– right.
You didn't. Your team didn't fish much at Lake Martin. It was like, you know, wow. You could go to Jordan. You could go to others and catch bigger fish. And so,
and that lake's changed a lot too.
Yeah,
you know, it changed a lot. Those spots really were deep. I mean, they were as deep as I've ever caught them.
Wow.
And I mean, I think you can do that. In the past, you were able to do that too, but the spots were a little bit bigger than they used to be.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. All right, well, let's look at 2017, your finishes there. At AOI tournament at Mille Lacs, finished 9th. At St. Clair, finished 4th. That was your best elite finish of the year at Lake St. Clair, and you were in the hunt on that one.
Right.
Jason Christie had a great last 2 days and won that one.
He came in and got you. Yeah, not this time though.
He did. Did you lead after? Were you leading Saturday on that thing?
I led for 2 days, or I believe 2 days there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Champlain also a strong finish, 8th. And I'll be honest, I marvel at the Southern guys doing so well up north. So St. Clair, Mille Lacs, you were 9th. St. Clair 4th, and Champlain 8th. So our northern swing was very good. And Matt had good tournaments up there, and Brock Mosley had good tournaments up there. I forget. Dustin Connell had good tournaments up there, and so it was a good swing for a lot of Alabama anglers, southern anglers. St. Lawrence not as good. 74. That was your toughest finish of the year. Dardanelle, 34. Rayburn, I believe that's 11. Is it 11 or 14?
Rayburn was in 4th.
I can't read my own writing.
Yep.
Rayburn was 4th. Rayburn.
It looks like an H, Jim.
Yeah, it's really bad. So you had 2 4th place
finishes. It was 2 4th. Yeah, I had 4th at Rayburn. Yep.
Ross Barnett, 62. Toledo Bend, 38. The Classic was in between there where he finished first. Okeechobee was 38. And Cherokee was 16. So out of the 10 elite tournaments of 2017, you finished in the money 8 times. That's a strong year.
I mean, but in his AOI finish, I know I'm jumping ahead here.
AOI finish was 4th.
Man, you were just a couple of fish from that, too.
He had a great year. The average finish for the elite year was 29th, with you know, a couple of high ones that bumped you up, but then also 2 4th-place finishes. In AOI, 4 AOI finishes, no, 3, excuse me, 3 AOI finishes to look at. Your first AOI run, you finished 9th. Funny to say, but that's his worst finish in AOI. 9th in 2015, 6th in 2016, and 4th in 2017. So you're getting a little better every year.
He seems to understand these fish pretty well.
I know
he
knows something about them. So that's an average finish of 6.3. In AOI in your 3 seasons.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Now, Thomas and I have a theory on fourth-year elites.
Let's hear it.
Okay.
Better be a good one.
It's based on a very small sample size because it's only Justin Lucas and Jacob Poroznik. But those two guys had similarly great three-year starts. After 3 years, Lucas' average finish was 7th. Poroznik, 3 years, 4th.
Jeez.
Okay. Dude, I mean, those two guys hammered.
Fourth.
Wow. So Lucas, then in his 4th year, finished 64th. Prosnick in his fourth year finished 47th.
You see where we're going with this now?
I don't want to set you up.
It's something interesting.
One theory that I've got, Thomas, you may have others, and Jordan, you may have others as well, but I think at that point when you've done that well, the amount of sponsor commitments and fan commitments and attention that you're getting and expectations is high. Yeah. I also wonder if you tend to relax a little bit because, like, this is easy. I don't know.
Or get settled in. We saw it with Aaron Martins after he won it, his third Angler of the Year. Edwin Evers didn't have a super great year after he won the Classic. Not that it was bad, but they don't seem to be as front and center. Maybe they're not as aggressive. I don't know what it is, but I don't see any quitting you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any quit. You know, I think I'm going to try as hard as I can every tournament, just like I think everybody does. I don't know what it is. You know, I mean, those guys are really great anglers, and you're going to have those years, I feel like, in this sport where you just, you know, it doesn't click every tournament, or I don't think it may be one thing. I think if you start off on a bad note, the first half of the season, let's say, then you feel like you got to try a little bit too hard, maybe. Mm-hmm. You may try too hard in the later half, the last half of the season, and just not put it together. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it comes down to, is a little momentum. If your momentum's not there, then it's hard to bounce out of it.
Momentum is huge, both positive and negative, and we've seen that affect the fantasy folks that pick that. I mean, there is something to be said. It's an immeasurable factor, but it is a factor.
I think what you said about trying too hard can be a real factor, because once you get kind of behind the eight ball a little bit, trying harder, working harder, pushing harder is not always the right way to catch more fish.
It really isn't. I mean, a lot of times it's just mental, and just in when you go out there, your mental mindset going into, like, practice, or, you know, making the right decisions during the tournament. I mean, it's really simple. It's simple things. It's not really, you know, the work ethic. I feel like that doesn't change throughout the guys. You know, I don't feel like Justin last year was like, oh, I'm going to wake up a little bit late for practice.
Right.
You know, it's just not having that momentum. But he caught on to some momentum later than year and did really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what happens. I mean, that's what happens to me. I know when I don't have the momentum going. I've had a few tournaments, you know, where it's just streak, you know, where 2-3 tournaments back-to-back, you know, I miss the cut. And then you get some momentum, and you feel like you're just make the right decisions.
Well, you already in 2017 showed, broke that model a little bit, because, you know, typically when a guy wins a Classic, he doesn't have as good of an elite year, and you finished fourth in AOI.
Right, so that we've already wrecked our thing there. But
so the next tournament coming up on the Elite Series is Sabine River. You finished that. That was your first Elite tournament in 2015, and you finished 22nd there. So how are you feeling about Sabine this time around?
Well, I'll give you a little stat, a little something for Sabine. My first day on the Elite Series was Sabine River. And the very first day I weighed in one fish for 1 pound.
Wow.
And
was that a fog delay day?
Yep, that was the one. And
it dumped like 12 inches of rain in 2 days or some stupid thing.
That was my best practice I've ever had. I mean, I feel like I was on the fish in that tournament than I ever have before on any Elite tournament, any Classic, and running my first spot, and they were just loaded in this ditch. I mean, I shook off so many, and Brandon Lester was in there, and he ended up taking third. Mm-hmm. And it was just a canal the size of this room, real small. And running the next place, and that ended up where Aaron and all those guys, top five that event. And I just made some bad choices and lost some key fish that first day. And I was down in the dumps. I mean, first day on the Elites, you're in 103rd. Mm-hmm. I'm like, is this how this is going to go?
That's how it usually goes with the rookies.
Yep,
but
luckily I bounced out that next day and had a good day. And just slowed down. I mean, that's been my – if it's been any nemesis for me, it's just bouncing around too much. But But that tournament's going to be – it's going to be a tough event for sure. I mean, they're having a lot of rain there right now. It's going to be muddy. It's going to be tough. But luckily for me, knowing I'm already in the Classic, I can kind of just settle down even a little bit more than I would be able to.
Right.
And, you know.
There it is.
You can
– pulling back a little bit.
Well,
it's not possible.
I'm not going to be super worried. And a lot of people are. Because it's going to be a tough event.
Yeah.
You know, I actually spoke with the fisheries guy down there, and he spoke real highly of the fishery over the last few years. He said, you know what, it's very healthy, and we're excited to see what the guys can do. And obviously the rain is going to be a factor, and we can't go into any details, obviously, but it's going to be a competitive event. And one of the things we love about tough events is that the anglers really hate those sometimes where it's a few fish, we'll earn a check, because you don't feel like you really have a shot.
And for the fans. But
for the fans, it's very exciting to watch and follow along.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. It's a challenge. I mean, you that's every tournament, though. It doesn't matter where you're at. At some point during the tournament, it's going to be a challenge. You're going to have to figure it out. And that's what next week, you know, sometimes those are the best events. You know, for somebody, they're going to love this. They're going to absolutely love this.
They're going to love it. That's right.
And so it'll be interesting for sure.
I know you'd like to add a blue trophy to your growing collection, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that'd be nice. So
looking back at
break up the monotony a little bit.
Yeah, there you go.
Looking back at this last Classic just a little bit, in terms of the qualities that you have as an angler, what would you rank as maybe the best quality that you've got in your sort of arsenal?
Well, I know when I fish well and when I do well in events, I feel like just you know, having that confidence that what you're doing is sticking to your what you want to do. And you know, a lot of times as anglers, you can kind of be all over the map. You can try you know, I try a lot going into like a practice for a tournament just to kind of feel. But my strong suit as anglers is going into a tournament and fishing new water during the event and not getting stuck in on a spot or not getting stuck in on one thing and really just having an open mind.
Yeah.
And that's probably one misconception that, you know, I don't know, just different anglers can think about us is, you know, we find these fish in practice and we have this big game plan going into the tournament. A lot of times it's not like that. You really have to, I mean, you have to adapt. The best fishermen, every day is different. The weather, the water's going to clear up, it's going to dirty up. And adapting to that is what makes a good angler, you know, during a 4-day event or 3-day event, because it's gonna change.
How much pre-practice do you do typically?
Typically, I do a little bit, but not a lot. I've kind of learned that on places like Sabine River, I go to, and Hartwell I went to for a few days, but I knew it probably wasn't gonna do me any good. But you know, I. Some events I do, some I don't. It just kind of really depends on the lake and the time of year. And, you know, it really hadn't helped me tremendously, I'm going to say, in events, you know. It's really my best events are places that I have little or no history on and just kind of just go show up and go fishing.
Well, look. You've had some tough events. You've come from behind, and there's a story I've heard you tell, and I'm not going to ask you about it. Last year at the Classic, going into day 3, I heard he was a little bit of a train wreck or needed a little emotional and mental support, and you fulfilled that for him. And I want to know the conversation that you had. Did you tell him to, hey, pull your head out of your butt and get to work? Or what did you say? How did you do it?
Well, actually, when I got to Houston was when it was, like, were you still in practice?
I was
still
in practice, I think.
Yeah, you were still practicing. And he was just kind of being a little negative. I mean, he was like, this is, and he said these words, which were just so strange for me to hear Jordan Lee say, is that this is like the first lake I just don't understand. Like, I just can't put it together. And I'm like, really? And so just every day, like, I was like, you need to be positive. You have to be positive. And like, I would even just smack him and say, no, you're being negative.
Yeah.
I do. And so, I mean, I just tried my best to kind of turn it around and, you know, the same thing happened this year, too. I mean, he didn't go into it with a very positive outlook. And so we just have to turn it around.
You know, as fishermen, you know, you try, like, in practice, and, you know, it's easy to be negative. I mean, mm-hmm. it really is for us. I mean, just because when you don't have any real good signs and you don't have anything definite and you're going into the biggest tournament there is, you would like kind of a clue.
Mm-hmm.
You want some sort of a clue. And I didn't get it in practice. I didn't really, you know.
Yeah, but you seem to be the kind of angler that seems to excel when you don't have a clue.
Yeah, but it still makes you a little uncomfortable going into it. You know, then that's the thing, like, for us. I mean, but I've learned now, if I haven't learned yet, that, you know, it really doesn't mean a lot. You know, getting that one bite the first day of the tournament was my changing moment in mm-hmm. the heart will. And that gave me the confidence, you know, but well, yeah, it's
this sport, as we're learning, we had Gerald Nulu Swindle in here not too long ago.
Yep.
I really am fascinated by the team aspect of what this is. You could do this on your own. I mean, you could go fishing and never get your laundry done. Just wait. I'm coming around. I see you shaking your head.
Yeah.
But really, the behind-the-scenes support yep. that your spouse provides, your to-be spouse, even though we already referred to you your future last name. But I want to know that dynamic. You talked a little bit about that, but tell me a little bit more about your day-to-day role in this team and how you support Team Jordan, and I guess the classic trophy sits in your house is something you both can share.
Yes.
So it's something you both can be proud of. How does it work?
I mean, obviously, besides keeping him positive and keeping the mental part of it together, which is not easy to do, mm-hmm. but besides that, I mean, I make his lunch. I get up at 4 a.m. and make him breakfast, whatever he wants.
Mm.
I usually will go with him to the ramp. I will say I do not back him in. Have not mastered that yet.
Of course, it takes time.
Well, yeah, it takes time and practice, and I don't really have a lot of that. So
you don't want to practice in front of the crowds?
No. I mean, I can handle it when we're just at home going fishing, but I just don't want to do that in front of the crowds quite yet. Maybe later on.
You know, to break in, I actually think it would be a great, like, Bassmaster Live competition. Get the wives together and the best.
I would
ones.
Probably cry.
Yeah, but you could do it. create a little competition on the other side of the team.
That would be pretty good.
I would cry.
So your support continues. It doesn't just go with, you know, your morning work. What about, do you watch Bass Track or Bass Trap, as they say?
No.
Don't nope. watch it. Okay.
Nope, I will not. I do not watch it. I do not look at the blog. I do not watch Bass Live, which I know sometimes he's like, I really wish you would have watched me fish today. It was really cool. And I'm like, I'm sure it was. But I just can't do it. I just can't watch it because, I mean, and I know that there's nothing I can do. You know, I mean, he doesn't know how I feel, but I'm like, I just don't need that during the day. I'm already nervous as it is. And it's kind of funny now, my friends and like our family has learned to not text me every single update. Because I'm like, stop.
Jordan just lost a big one.
Just broke off a 10. I saw it jump by the boat.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I can't handle that.
She's like,
but
oh, no.
Yeah.
She does. She does a lot for me. I mean, that's.
I pack up. I've packed up a million times without him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already done when he gets home.
Oh, yeah.
Unpack.
And we don't have enough time in the day for what we do, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, during a tournament, I mean, as far as rig and tackle, and you don't even think about. I mean, I don't even have time to think about food. Almost. I mean, it's really. You're up all night almost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just because there's not enough time in the day. When you wake up early in the morning, you gotta. You know, it starts early. You have to get after it. You got to go to launch. You fish all day, but you know you may be last flight. You may not weigh into the last boat. Then you have to rig your tackle.
Yeah, it starts all over again.
It's already dark, and you don't even have time to think about food. And when Kristen's, you know, traveling with me, which she has done a little bit more here and there, and, you know, it just makes it so much easier, just the things you don't have to worry about. And
I want to get more into this, and we have more questions for you. Before we go into all of that stuff, I want you to take me back. There's two points in your life I want you to talk about. First of all, start out with when you decided you wanted to pursue this professional fisherman thing. Yeah. And then take it to the point. I asked Matt when he was in here, when he did his podcast, about your parents' reaction to you guys jumping into this. And he had a good story to that. But there had to have been a point where your parents were like, oh, man, there's two of them now. They both want to do this. I want to hear about that point where you made the decision officially with them involved. But take me to the beginning. Tell me about when you decided bass fishing was your dream and then up through college.
Yeah, so it was in high school when I started fishing a lot of tournaments, and I had an aluminum boat. I was fishing with one of my friends from high school, and, you know, I was just fishing a little local lake in Coleman, Alabama. Lake Catoma is just a aluminum, you know, 9.9 horsepower lake. There's tournaments, so we fished that. Well, I started to get into it a little bit more and fished as a co-angler in the Bass Weekend Series when that was still going on. And I did that for a year, and I'm like, man, I think I need to fish as a boater. So, you know, I just had the knack, I felt like, and I just wanted to do it. And so it was my 16th birthday, and, you know, I can't remember exactly now, but I'm sure I was pestering the parents big time for a boat. I was really wanting a bass boat. I mean, that was, that was my dream, to have a Ranger boat or whatever. I don't think I cared at the time. And so my 16th birthday, they got me a Ranger. And I was, you know, obviously stoked because I could go fishing wherever I wanted to now and fish.
Didn't have to keep a couple paddles in the boat anymore.
Exactly. So I got to go fishing bigger lakes, and I started fishing that year. I fished the Bass Weekend Series, and, you know, I mean, I was going to travel in North Alabama fishing these lakes that, you know, I really hadn't fished a lot. So I was, you know, I was practicing a good bit for them, and I did really well that year. I won Angler of the Year, and I had turned 17, but I mean, I was fishing against, you know, the best guys in North Alabama. I mean, these guys have been fishing for a long time. I ended up winning a tournament and won Angler of the Year that year. I had 115 guys. And so my parents kind of knew then, and well, they knew before then, but that was really the stepping stone for me where I was like, man, I can do this. You know, that was like, I just need to keep, you know, take the right steps. And I was kind of thinking, you know, what's next? You know, I know I can't get, like, publicity really off this. And, you know, the college fishing, I was watching that on TV. I was – college bass, it was starting to come on TV, and I saw guys from Auburn on there. Mm. And, you know, I remember vividly where I was sitting in my house watching that, and I was like, you know, that's where I want to go to school anyways. I was like, this is the real deal. I mean, you can be on ESPN. I mean, this is the way to go. And that was kind of the moment where the college fishing really, you know, was on my mind. And my brother was already in school at Birmingham Southern, and, you know, he was fishing a little bit, but, you know, he wasn't all in. I was really all in high school, and it's what I wanted to do. So going to Auburn, you know, that's where it all started pretty much. The college fishing just went from being, you know, just some real small to that first couple years I was there is when it just boom, it just exploded, and I just happened to be there and at the right time. And, you know, Matt started a fishing team then at Birmingham Southern, and that's just when all the craziness, I guess you could say, started happening.
Because you guys were you guys on the same team when he won the college championship?
So yeah, we were on the same team that year. We fished together, and that's the year he won, and then, you know, the next year I fished with Shane Powell. He was my partner that last year, and we fished tournaments, you know, throughout college together. But, I mean, all in all, I mean, it was really just a stepping stone from, you know, even before taking it back, before the weekend series, I fished in a junior club, and that really kind of opened my eyes to you know, just traveling a little bit, just fishing different lakes. And so it was just a process, you know. It wasn't like one thing. I mean, it was a little bit of everything. that you know, definitely got me to where I'm at now. It wasn't just one series, or it wasn't just college fishing. I mean, it was, you know, a little bit of everything, and the parents' support too. I mean, they supported me, you know, from when I was, you know, in high school, when it, you know, it wasn't cool back then. I mean, it wasn't that cool. I mean, nobody was doing it. You know, I was the only person that was fishing any tournaments anywhere. I mean, there wasn't anybody doing it. So it wasn't like it was popular. And I remember vividly, I remember quitting baseball. And, you know, we were a big-time baseball powerhouse. I mean, they won state. Matt won state championships. And, you know, they were really good baseball players. And, you know, I got to a point where I played baseball and sports, and I just didn't love it anymore. And spring was coming around, and all I could think about was the baseball field. I remember I was just like, man, I just want to be on the water. I remember skipping practice to go in the water, and that was a no-no. You didn't do that. I mean,
you played catcher?
I was a second base, and outfield a little bit. But I loved it growing up, but when it got to that point, I'm like, I need to quit. I just need to start fishing. You know, I need to start fishing tournaments. That's what I want to do. And it wasn't a cool thing to do. I mean, it wasn't like – but now, seeing it, there's the teams that they have. It gives younger people that option and that dream. Jordan did this. We got a high school team. We got a platform. This is something that we can do, and it's fun. We love fishing tournaments. And
Brian Brasher just wrote a great column about it. Provides everybody an opportunity to do something competitive. You don't have to be a stud football player or baseball player.
You don't. And that's kind of where I was at. It wasn't, you know, now you have that. You have friends that do it. I mean, you get to have that camaraderie that you and have a great time. I mean, you know, sports are awesome, but kids and younger people get burnt out on it. You know, I mean, you do it your whole life and it's kind of a drag. Well, fishing, I mean, it's fun for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. It's a huge – it's probably one of the coolest things that I've gotten to see just growing up through it, how much it's changed, and just being in all the settings of it. It's really it's special.
You talked a little bit at the Classic about Gavin Ellis.
Yep.
And I got to meet him downstairs. He's got to be 6'7" or something.
Yeah, he's a football player.
He's a tall guy.
Oh, yeah.
And your mom looked at the two of you hugging each other, and she said, Mutt and Jeff. And is he the guy you kind of learned from? Is he your age?
Yep. So Gavin was 1 year older than me, and we played baseball together just when we were probably 11 or 12. And I remember one day we were at practice. I mean, this is 15, 16 years ago, so it's hard to kind of remember. But we were at practice, and he knew I fished a little bit. You know, he and I like to, you know, I fish ponds and stuff and whatever. He's like, hey, you want to fish a tournament with me? And I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, I do. Yeah, that sounds awesome. He's like, all right, we'll come. You know, there's tournaments on Monday and Friday nights. And I'm like, okay. I was like, you just tell me when and where. And he would pick me up from school because I couldn't drive yet. He could drive. So I was probably, you know, I don't know what age I was, probably 14 or so. And I fished my first tournament with him. And we fished tournaments on that lake. And, you know, he taught me a lot. And we fished a lot together, you know, year round.
He used the word, Mike Sukon interviewed him for his Daily Limit.
That's cool.
It was great. He he said, Gavin said, that he could tell early on that you were a natural at this. And others have used that phrase. What does that mean to you? What is a natural angler?
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know the definition of it. I just know that, you know, I've always just kind of had a knack for it. I mean, you know, fishing with, like, Gavin, I mean, you know, fishing has always been, I'm not going to say easy because I had to work really hard at it, but, you know, I understand it. I understand the bass, and I understand, you know, what they do at certain times of year, and, you know, kind of just how they move and, you know, things like that. I think that's what a natural angler does. They just understand outdoors probably, and you know, I'm not a big time hunter, but when it comes to fish and bass, you know, I really understand what their movements are and, you know, how they react to, you know, watercolor and things like that.
Well, there's something about the natural side of understanding the outdoors, because there's a lot of guys who fish the Elite Series are tremendous hunters as well.
Yep.
You need to go kill a turkey.
I'm going to.
I know, and you're going to love it.
Yeah.
You might quit the Elite Series after you start doing that.
I may.
It's life worried about.
Your brother, Matt, you know, one of the fascinating things is it seems like he's a very different kind of angler. Matt has a degree in engineering. If I remember right, yours is in marketing.
That's right.
And you're very different in terms of how organized you are.
I've seen both their boats.
Jesse, hey, mine's not bad right now.
Jesse Wiggins, you know, I talked a little bit about hanging with Matt, and he said Matt's got a schedule for my schedule that we have to like touch base with him to make sure we're on schedule.
Yep.
So y'all are quite different in your approach, it seems like.
Yeah, I think so. I think every angler's different in how they do things and kind of their approach to tournaments. And that's the cool thing about our sport, you know. I mean, Cap Van Dam's arguably the best fisherman that there's ever been, but I fish totally different than him. I fish, and every angler fishes different, and that's the cool thing. You get to his fans and you know, everybody that works at Bass gets to see how different anglers fish, and I think Matt and I are different in how we approach tournaments. And you know, he's found his way to do things, and it's worked out for him. And I feel like, yeah, like you said, I mean, he always knows, you know, like, I didn't know anything about the Sabine. I haven't even thought about the Sabine. And he already knew that, you know, there's going to be a lot of rain. The water's going to come up. I mean, I don't even know that. I'll look at that the night before practice, you know, and say, well.
He says this jokingly, but this is where you help him out a lot. This will get better as years go on.
Yeah, but, you know, and so I get to kind of hear that from Matt. I'm like, oh, really? I didn't know anything about it, you know. And you know, Matt's already probably been on Google Earth, and he's probably marked every ditch that has clean water for 100 miles, and he's prepared. He does his homework better than anybody. And
Showed in the last 12 months. Yeah, in fact, I mean, how does it feel to steal the classic from him? He had a shot, Jordan. I mean, he was right there. I was with him.
Did Matt finish fourth?
Yeah, but he was
okay. Yeah, man. he was right,
and he was hungry, Jordan. Yeah, he was hungry.
Well, there was a lot. There was 50 other hungry guys too.
There was a period of time on day three where Jordan was in first and Matt was in second on Bass Track for, I swear, it was like
most of the day.
Yeah. And
I did notice this, and you'd have to go back and check every stat, but I was monitoring Bass Track by the minute, and you would catch a fish, and he would catch one at the exact same time, exact same size.
Wow.
And it was it's obviously built up, and there was separation that occurred, but there was like a common theme, Matt Lee, Jordan Lee. And the same fish, and you guys literally had almost the same weight, according to Bass Track, most of the days.
And the funny thing is, that last day, we were doing the same thing. Yeah. We were doing the same techniques on doing, you know, fishing dogs.
You know, had he won, people would start calling you Matt at boat ramps all the time. Way to go, champ. And you could be like,
Funny they still do. It's like nobody knows the difference between us. It doesn't matter who it is. I mean,
look, he's a good sport.
He really is.
Because I know it's an angler.
He handled it well.
It has to cut him to just like, man, I was so close. And he's done so well in the last 12 months. Like, you know that his time's coming. But
yeah.
Now, I dig this. Now, I want one last question, and then we got to get into the intricacies of how you met your to-be bride, and that's a good story I want you to tell. Before we do that, when you told your parents, I'm quitting baseball, I'm going fishing, I know that they're super supportive, but was there any hesitation? Did they think, well, I need to think about this, or was it a go for it? Get it done.
It was really a go for it. I think when I first started fishing a little bit bigger tournaments and fishing as a co-angler, and they saw how much I loved it, and they were being really supportive through it. I mean, you know, they thought, hey, you could go for it, you know, and that's probably the key moment that I had as far as fishing goes.
You know, it's a good part of everybody's story, and there's definitely a difference between the younger anglers that kind of grew up in the high school, college.
Right.
And to move on, one of our favorite stories was with Matt Heron.
You
know, he was sitting right where you were and got misty. Matt Heron was getting misty talking about telling his dad he wasn't going to carry on the family business and how that was a tough, hard spot in their life. And, you know, I think maybe it's a generational difference.
I do.
Swindle, the same thing. You know, he left a construction job and went fishing. Right.
And Swindle talked about how, I think it was an uncle said to him that, you know, Swindle came back from his first tournament and did poorly, and his uncle was like, "See, I told you, you can't."
Yeah.
And here he is.
But there was support along the way, right. And that occurs. It seems like all the successful anglers, the ones we've talked to specifically, have the kind of support at home with their parents. Across the board, that really exemplifies how much of a team sport this is.
It is.
You cannot. You can do it alone, maybe. Who knows if you'll hang on to it? But right. To really have the support across the board makes it possible. Makes it feasible.
It does, because you know, let's say 10 years ago, when I started, you know, professional fishing, it was going on, but it's not a career path that a lot of people see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the percentages of being an elite series angler are small, but
it's very similar to the NFL draft. If you want to get down to numbers, right. Very similar,
but it's doable. You know, it really is doable. And I feel like,
what's the key? What advice would you give?
Just, you know, the biggest advice that I have is the number of tournaments and number of hours I fished growing up. I mean, I was on the lake a lot, and it wasn't something – I think guys and younger kids, they want to jump into it too quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to start jumping into bigger tournaments right off the bat. But you need to get tournaments under your belt and fish local tournaments against good anglers, you know, and do that more. And that's what all the guys that – I say fish the elites now did before. I mean, they fished against people that are better than them.
Mm.
I mean, that's what I did. And just like any sport, I mean, if you were, you know, if you're playing baseball and you're pitching against minor league guys and you're in high school and you're doing well, there's a chance you're going to get better. And that's something that I feel like now you can kind of get into and just tournaments in general. I mean, that's really – the only way to do it, and take one step at a time and not want to be a pro come right out of high school, because it's not going
to
work.
Well, a lot of people don't know the history of what it took to get to where you're at.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to see Jordan Lee hoisting a trophy over his head 2 times on the biggest stage.
Yeah.
But there's a backstory there,
right,
that required blood, sweat, and tears, good decisions, support, the whole gamut. So there's
hundreds of tournaments.
Yeah, and good decisions, like you said. I mean, I could have done a lot just in high school, and you know, instead of doing whatever on the weekends, or you know, I was fishing tournaments, and it's something I love. But just, you know, putting the time in behind the doors, you know, and that's really what it takes. I didn't have a girlfriend, you know, I never even had a girlfriend in high school because I was fishing so much.
You saved a lot of money.
I did save a lot of money.
I don't think you went to prom, did you?
No, I was fishing a tournament that day.
Dude, I'm so proud of you.
But, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, that's just what I did, and that's how much I loved it. But I wasn't, you know, in high school, I wasn't like, man, I'm going to be a pro angler tomorrow. I knew it wasn't going to be easy. I knew it was going to take quite a few years to get there. But I knew the steps that it's going to take to get there.
The first pro we had in here was Justin Lucas, and we always bring this up. Right. I love it. He hit it on the head. You know, master your craft on the water first. Spend time on the water. Learn how to catch bass first.
Yep. That's it. As simple as that. I mean, Justin, you can look at all the great anglers, if it's Brandon Palahniuk, if it's Justin, they all have similar stories. They didn't come from – you know, they didn't come from a lot of money or mm-hmm. had a lot of, you know, things growing up. They worked hard, and you know, they had fishing, and they were going to do whatever it took to get there. And it was the same with me. My dad was a vet. He still is, and he was always busy, so he wasn't a tournament fisherman. I had mm-hmm. nobody in my family that tournament fished, but you know, I loved it enough to know that if I do whatever it takes, if I just make all these right steps, and I could see this in the future, I could visualize, you know, fishing on the Elite Series. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, taking those right steps and just doing everything I could, I knew I was going to be successful at some point.
Well, a dream takes sacrifice.
Going back a little bit in your history, so you won the College Classic Bracket Tournament in 2013. Muskegon Lake, and then went into a full season of Opens.
Yep.
Were you still in college that year?
So that's when I graduated. So okay. I graduated as soon as I got out of school. And I fished a few pro events in college, but I wasn't about to jump into the Opens just because I knew how time consuming. So that was I just got out of college, and you know that's when I signed up for all 9 Opens. You know, I didn't have much money in the bank. I had the Auburn rig though. Yeah, and I had the Auburn Toyota and the Auburn the Skeeter. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, obviously helped out.
Yep.
Right.
And
did they let you keep that? They should let you keep that.
No, they should have.
No, in fact, the truck gets passed on to the next college winner.
Does the college winner now have my truck from the first year?
I know he did last year. I don't know about this year.
Yeah. They may need to do John Garrett. Maybe a little crusty.
John Garrett had it last year.
Old French fries down in the seat corners.
Think how many college kids. I mean, that's like 5 college kids in the same truck.
I've not met a lot of college kids that have it all together when it comes to keeping things clean.
I'll tell you one thing that's funny. When I had that truck, I blacked the windows out. You know, I tinted them, and I had like 5% tint, and you couldn't even see in them or out them. And all the college, I think somebody had to take it off because the state trooper like pulled them over.
But you still keep your windows dark. After winning the Classic last year, I'm going to laugh about this the rest of my life. Steve Bowman, one of the guys we work with on the water, he's kind of the head coach. He goes, all right, we need to get Jordan Lee on the first day on the water after he wins the Classic. And I walk up, knock on the window, and his window is completely black. I can't see, and it comes down this far.
An inch.
I'm like... This is not how this is going to work.
When I say it's Thomas, I'm not going to roll it down the whole way.
Hey, just look. What do you want?
So that first year in the Opens, that first Open, which was at Toho in Florida.
Yeah, speaking of making dreams come true.
Kristen, you came to that tournament. Are you a native of Florida?
Yes.
Okay, and you came to that tournament because of what?
I was working for the company PowerPole, and what's funny and why we know this is fate was I didn't even need to be there. I just went. They were like, do you want to go to the tournament and work it, the registration? And I'm like, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, and part of my job as the social media marketer, like I had to know who all of the anglers were. Right. So I kind of was just testing my knowledge there. I was just kind of pointing them out. And I do remember watching him walk in. And I said to my coworker, I'm like, that's Matt and Jordan Lee. And, you know, I was pretty proud of myself. I knew who all the guys were.
Look at those losers.
Yeah, that's really what I said. But
so you guys met in registration, saw each other?
We saw each other.
So here's the deal.
Yeah, let him tell us.
So I walk
in. Fix the story when he gets off track.
So I'm with all my buddies. You know, I'm fresh out of college. I mean,
here it comes.
I'm having a good time. Even though I'm fishing the Opens, and serious, man, I have a couple of my buddies. You know, Dustin Cannell, who was fishing it, and Matt, and I forget who else. Lucas, and somebody else. We're all staying together. And so I come into registration, and I'm kind of, you know, I don't even know exactly the words I say, but I see Kristen in there. Obviously, I'm a single guy, and yeah, I'm like, man, she's, you know, she looks good, something along those lines. And I didn't say anything to her. I was like, I'm not even going to go through, because it was just to get the free, you know, the you get a hat or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not even worried about
that. Did you come back through a couple times, say you're Matt the second time? Hey.
So I didn't even go through, because I'm like, I'm trying to play this in my head. I'm like, well, see, if I go through and I make an idiot of myself right now, then she's never going to talk to me. So I just got to figure out who she is. And, you know, they were laughing at me because I wouldn't go through the line. And, we were a little bit late to the meeting, so I was like, well, mm-hmm. I was like, I'll figure out who she is from Justin. So I figured out from Justin that night and, you know, kind of did a little Facebook stalking.
But you know what's funny, though, is I actually, from that day, I remember that he was the only one that did not come talk to me because all the guys came right over to me and, hello, who are you?
You're memorable.
Yeah, but I was like, that one guy, he's so rude.
What smart. What a stiff. Just brushed her off.
You know what's funny, though, is when I saw the Facebook message come through and I saw his little from the college championship picture come through, I knew who it was, and I went, that's about right.
Yeah, I think I asked along the lines of, where can I get
a story?
Yeah, I was like, you know, I know you work for PowerPole, and do you think you could get me like a T-shirt, a PowerPole T-shirt or something like that?
Well, if you would have gone through the line.
That was my
did he get a T-shirt out of that?
No.
Good.
No, wait, yes, you did. You did.
Yeah, I think I did.
That was smooth, bro.
Well, and
that was my first.
I got to say, at least you knew, you know, you'd make an idiot out of yourself in person.
Oh,
so
I
went through Facebook first.
Yeah.
Is that not a millennial move?
It is. It was so millennial.
But I was very, I will say, I was very gullible, though, because I was like, well, would you like a long sleeve or a short sleeve? You know, what size are you?
I didn't care about the shirt.
And he's just like, yeah, I don't really care. Surprise me. And he's like, here's my number. It's easier this way.
Oh, nice.
Well,
nice. But then it kind of, we didn't talk really much.
You were fishing at Amistad, and you know that's when I learned fishing was the priority. I mean, he waited weeks to talk to me again, and then reached out.
Yeah, a month or so.
Yep, and then he fished the Classic, the Gunnersville Classic, and obviously we had just started talking, so I wasn't gonna go show up to that. I didn't even know him, you know.
Yeah.
But I watched every single day. And okay. See, I watched Bass Track those days, and I watched all the footage because I'm like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
So you've been through this with him. You kind of around for
from the beginning.
90% of the pro career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If not all of it, actually. So there came a day. You'd been following the sport. You're involved in the industry. You realized how big it was, how demanding it was, and that's got to be intimidating. I don't know how to say this as a prospective wife? Is that the right thing to say? Maybe not. Did that scare you off at all?
Prospective girlfriend.
I mean, that's a big commitment.
No, it didn't scare me off. It really hasn't. And it's kind of, I mean, just starting out with watching him fish the Opens, it was like a nice transition into, because I just got to watch all of it come true. And, you know, that first Classic, I didn't even really realize how big of a deal it was. And I called him the morning that, or before the tournament, and he caught that big 8-pound fish, and I told him, I said, catch me a big fish today, you know, not realizing the pressure I put on him.
And you did.
And he did catch a big fish
through.
That day.
Yeah. Well, I asked him what his best quality as an angler was. What's his best quality as a boyfriend or fiance, prospective husband?
I would say that he is very caring, and he always puts me before anything, and I mean, besides fishing.
Good answer.
Besides fishing. but that's okay. But no, he's always thinking of others, and that is my favorite quality, the pure gold heart he does have. So,
well, that's one of the things I love about him too. He does cry a lot, and I think
I'm gonna tear.
I do.
I you know what you said.
I think I get it from my dad. It's
a very emotional family.
Yeah, it is. And actually, the funny thing about that is you're talking about a cry a lot. Palnick, we were talking about the other night at dinner. He cries. he told me he cries a lot. He's like. He, like, tears up in movies, and I'm the same way, and I'm like,
man, I can't get my shoes tied today. This is just a bad way to start.
I'm like, this sucks. Why do I cry so much?
Maybe some of the best cry.
Hey, don't ever change that. The raw emotion makes people love you.
Yeah.
That's right.
Especially
that's right.
Her. So you guys are set to be married when?
In October.
Oh, that's coming up. Mm-hmm. I had a buddy try to get married in November. He did get married, and I stood with him, and that in Iowa is the peak of the rut, and if anybody knows deer hunting, you don't.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You don't do anything in November. I almost told him no. But October, I mean,
you know,
that's pretty clean for you.
Typically in October, people don't get married in Alabama.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's terrible hot.
Because
it's ridiculous.
Because of football season.
Oh.
Well, but see, I took that into account. I knew that hunting season was a big deal. I had to check with my dad. And
it'll probably be hot.
But. Well, and then with the football season, our wedding is on a Sunday.
Oh, so, okay. All right.
Well, and it's after the season, the fishing season, which is the most important thing. Is over,
right.
So.
Right.
We'll so I want to hear the proposal story. Is that something you guys can share?
Oh, yeah.
When I proposed to you, mm-hmm. How I did it? Yeah, everybody would think it would be something to do with fishing, but it was totally not.
We did go fishing the day before, though.
Yeah, we went fishing the day before, and I was like, you know, I was really worried that this ring that I bought her, if I did it on a boat or something, I was going to drop it. It's going to fall through a crack.
Good move.
It's going to fall or go in the lake, and I was never going to be able to live it down. And so we were at her parents' house in North Georgia around Alpharetta, and we went up into the – we went out to eat at a – it was like a winery.
Yeah, and what was funny was he asked me, he said, what do you want to do tomorrow? And people said, well, did that kind of give you a clue that he was asking you what you wanted to do? And I said, no. Like, that's what he, I mean, I pretty much.
So I proposed to her up there. It was nice. I mean, it was cool.
There
very
it was.
Very good. Very good.
Well, basically, you didn't tell them that. So there's kind of a funny thing.
That's what I was. I knew there was more.
No, listen.
And there's more.
You should have let her tell the story.
Yeah, see, he's not a very good storyteller. But
I'm not. I'll leave good details out.
I don't know how to say this, but Jordan is very accident prone, and now he's taken me down with him.
Wow.
But bad things, not bad things, but unfortunate things happen to us a lot during our daily activities.
Oh,
well,
wow.
And one of the things was after he proposed to me, like, we're up, like, overlooking the mountains. Like,
oh,
on
yeah.
This big,
I know what you're gonna say.
Both in tears.
Yes, both in
tears. I wasn't in tears. I was.
But he drops his
gotcha.
Costas off the roof of this building. And
oh,
they
wow.
just, like, go down onto, like...
Yeah, so there's a winery down there, and there's, like, I proposed to her down there, thought it'd be kind of romantic, you know, and then we go up, you know, we're laughing, we're happy, she's calling people, and I'm sitting over this, like, balcony. Well, I drop my sunglasses over this, I'm just looking off of it, and of course my sunglasses fall off my head, and so my sunglasses are laying on this balcony, so I had to go up into the... wherever into the restaurant, somebody had to get out, get a ladder just to get my coasters. I'm like,
wow,
okay, this is a cluster. Yeah. We just need to get out of here before
is,
something else happens.
We hope this isn't a prediction of the future marriage.
I know that's the truth.
I hope my bad luck stops before it hits my son. I'm afraid it's
yeah.
probably already hit him though.
Yeah,
it keeps it interesting though.
Yeah,
never.
Hey, I've got one more question about your style. There's certain elite anglers who I think, you know, like the attention, like the limelight.
Right.
And others not. And I think the sport of fishing, there's an awful lot of elite anglers who they like to get off by themselves. They're not bad guys socially or it's not like they don't like
yeah.
people, but it's a solitary sport in a lot of ways. Much of your day is spent not talking and that kind of thing. So where do you fall in that? You know, with two classics in a row, there's a lot of attention.
There is.
A lot of people want interviews and a lot of companies wanting your time.
Edwin wasn't lying when he said your life's about to change, was he?
Yeah, he wasn't lying at all. And it really does. I mean, just as far as, you know, like you said, dealing with different companies that I work with and the media, it is a challenge. Not every day, but I mean, especially after the classic win, I mean, it really does take up a lot of time. And I'm the kind of guy too that, yeah, I do like to a little bit be by myself. Something, you know, when I go fishing, I don't really usually ask anybody to go with me. I usually just go with my dog. You know, that's just how I am. I like to be out there, you know, by myself. So that's just kind of my thing to get away a little
mm-hmm.
bit. But yeah, I mean, you really have to, you know, I've tried to embrace it though. I mean, that's kind of what Chris and I've talked about too after last year. I mean, you got to use it to your advantage, and that's something I don't totally ignore, you know. It's not something I'm like, or I hate or anything like that. It's just different, you know. You have to really know how to kind of embrace it once you get to that level of, you know, from being basically just a, you know, a college kid coming in the elites to now you had some success and you have a lot of media attention on you. You really have to embrace it, and you have to grow. I mean, you have to grow up pretty quick, you know, as far as
and you're marrying a social media expert, by the way,
exactly.
which is an excellent decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys got it made. You have a marketing degree. I'm guessing you do as well.
No, I actually don't. But it would seem like I do.
Yeah.
I don't know if he could do it.
there it
yeah,
is.
It's a bad thing.
Cold hard truth.
Yeah. You know, I went to college and studied all these years, except she knows more about it than I do. I don't know how that works.
I think he got a degree in fishing.
Yeah, well, you know what?
whatever happened, it
hey, the green fish will pay the bills. Don't worry about it. You've got a good teammate that keeps up the other end.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Can't complain about anything.
Play to each other's strengths.
That's what's important.
You know what's funny about, you know, as far as, like, the stats go, and you never would have thought in a million years that, you know, coming out of college, that a college kid could have that much success in fishing. You know, I mean, that's just, it still blows my mind. I mean, there's all these different career paths that you can take in life, and you have this platform that, you know, that Bass puts together where it gives me, people like me, a shot to, you know, live my dream. So.
Well, it is a dream, and it's a dream that comes with a lot of sacrifice, a lot of cost, a lot of reward. I mean, you're
yep.
you're living the dream. You have this story that's etched in history now, and you're, I mean, let's be real, you're just getting your career started.
Right.
You're only a few years into this, and you know, those two cats are a lot older than you, but you got sights on that record, on those numbers that are seemingly impossible to grab, and you got a good partner going into it. Anyway, we're excited you guys came in. Congratulations on all the success. And wish you both the best in your coming wedding days.
It'll be fun.
How's the planning going, by the way? Are you sick of that already?
Yeah. Well, we're having a very small wedding, which is good because this year's very busy already.
Probably good thinking, but hey, it means most everything. Thank you guys, Jordan and Kristen.
Thank you, Jim.
Mr. Jim Sexton, another great job on all those numbers. In fact, you kind of caught me by surprise on a few yet again.
You know, Thomas, I keep trying to step it up and surprise you and the anglers.
I feel so honored.
I was impressed, too.
Your significant other.
Whatever. Hey, you've been listening to Inside Bassmaster, another great episode with another great angler. Thanks for being here. This is Thomas Allen. We'll catch you here next time.
Peace.
Do it.